Mic check. Mic check. 1, 2, 1, 2. Okay, I think we're good to go here, folks. How's it going? It's Chris Sobieski coming to you live from the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce radio station here in beautiful Flemington, New Jersey. So this is a little bit different of a show than we've been doing the past few weeks. If you remember, I was doing a show with Jeannie and Larry, and their schedules got a little bit busy recently, so I got to kind of, you know, man the fort by myself. So I figured, you know, I'm going to be probably starting my own show soon, you know, independent of what the two of them are doing. So I figured I'd make this my first episode of my official show, which is tentatively titled Sobescast. Now, my last name is Sobieski, obviously, so, you know, back in, I think it was middle school, my buddies gave me the nickname Sobes, you know, the shorthand of Sobieski, obviously, so that's where the name comes from, in a nutshell, in case you found that interesting. You probably didn't, but regardless. So, what am I going to do by myself? Now, I guess I'll be doing something similar to what I was doing working with Jeannie and Larry, where we, you know, just kind of go through some stories, talk about stuff. Today, I don't know, I kind of thought we'd do something a little bit different than the normal kind of banter between the three of us, or just me and Jeannie. Kind of more or less what I've been doing by myself when I've been filling in for them. And this is kind of going to be the format for my show going forward if I'm going to be doing things by myself. So this is more of like a test run kind of thing. So forgive any technical difficulties that may arise. Now, what's on deck today? We got a bunch of different stuff going on here. We got a few stories. We're going to be talking about Biden's eviction moratorium, or lack thereof. It's going to be an interesting one. This is something we touched on last week, but you know, it was just me and Jeannie, but I figured I would follow up because there's been some interesting developments on that front recently. So, yeah, we got the we got the eviction moratorium. We're going to get to the vaccine later on, and COVID, and there's a lot of stuff going on there, as I'm sure you're probably aware. We'll get into it when the time arises. Additionally, we're going to be talking about the infrastructure bill, some possible taxes that might be involved with that. A couple local stories more pertinent to New Jersey, Central Jersey more specifically, where, you know, this show is broadcast from and where I'm at, and, you know, I think most of my listeners are from. A couple interesting things on the New Jersey marijuana legalization front that are working their way through right now, and the murder mystery kind of thing. I'm just teasing it. I don't want to give you too many details, so let's start diving into it, shall we? First story of the day, we're going to be following up on Biden's eviction moratorium. So this is from Fox News, published yesterday, actually. Headline, Psaki dismisses concerns over legality of Biden's renewed eviction moratorium. So before we get into the story, let me give you guys a little bit of background on this whole situation, right? So I think it was last year, the CDC had put out this eviction moratorium thing, right? This basically, by virtue of a CDC executive order, technically coming from Biden, I guess, because the CDC is a federal executive agency, this order comes down that says that you can't, you know, landlords can't evict their tenants while COVID's going on because of, you know, the fact that it's a pandemic, and I guess there's some kind of health-related stuff that would give them at least a degree of authority to make such a call, right? Now, obviously, this was good probably for a lot of tenants who, you know, had the security of being able to stay in their homes, not having to worry about getting kicked out, you know, in such dire times, right? But the tenants aren't the only people involved. You got to think about landlords too. And what a lot of people don't really understand is that landlords aren't necessarily, you know, uber wealthy people, right? Oftentimes you get people who maybe inherited a property from, you know, their parents when they passed away, or it's a, you know, a side little income property that they purchase, and, you know, not every landlord is a massive, you know, land developer, land owning entity, right? So knowing that, I guess Trump and the boys last year gave out assistance. Well, they set aside federal tax dollars in the federal budget to help the landlords out, right? There's an assistance program for them so that they could recoup what they lost on tenants not paying rent and them not being able to evict said tenants, right? Now, the money's having a hard time finding its way to a lot of these landlords. So they were kind of hoping that this eviction moratorium would expire, right? And it was set to expire July 31st, just about last week, right? And that was in response to a lawsuit brought against the CDC by, I think, a group of landlords. I don't know if it was professional, not professional, but like an, that's the word I'm looking for, like a an advocate agency for landlords. I don't know if it was that or individual landlords or what have you, but point being, they brought the suit against the CDC, and it ultimately worked its way up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court ruled that the moratorium was effectively unconstitutional, right? They said it could be done by an act of Congress, but this was something done by the executive branch. I'm sorry, that he had no authority. Well, not he had no authority, but that the president, whoever it is, had no authority to do, right? Whether it be Trump or Biden, whoever's the president, that's, you know, basic separation of power stuff, right? You have the legislative branch, that's Congress and the Senate. They're supposed to pass the laws and create the laws. The president's supposed to enforce them, hence the term executive, because he's supposed to execute the laws. A lot of people don't get that. I know that's like civics 101, but for whatever reason, a lot of people think that the president has this, you know, unlimited pool of authority that he can do with whatever he pleases. It's just not the case. Well, maybe it is. We'll get into it. So the Supreme Court came down with this decision at the end of last, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, right? And they basically said, like I just laid out, that Congress, or that eviction moratorium, there could be an eviction moratorium, but it had to be implemented by law by Congress. It couldn't just be the executive branch via the CDC issuing this order, right? So they basically made, the Supreme Court ruled that that, the previous eviction moratorium was unconstitutional, and Biden even admitted, you know, vis-a-vis his spokespeople, that he had no authority to re-implement this the moratorium, right? Now, after they said that last week, they tried to go to Congress to get them to pass it, and they, I don't want to say failed to do it, but they didn't do it, you know, for better or worse. And now, we got the story from Fox News that I already read the headline of, but I'll refresh your memory on. Psaki dismisses concerns over legality of Biden's renewed eviction moratorium. So basically, they're essentially admitting that they have no authority to execute this moratorium, but they're going to do it anyway. And I guess what they're banking on is the fact that the court system, especially now, moves at the speed of molasses. So, you know, let's say they implemented, I guess, today or yesterday, whenever they did. What am I saying here? You know, someone's going to sue them, right? And, you know, just knowing what I know about how the legal system works, being an attorney, it's going to take a long, sweet long time for this to actually work its way through the court, right? Not normally it does. Even without the pandemic, it takes a while, but especially now because they're doing, you know, hearings by Zoom, and that's always a problem. Then you got to schedule everybody, and it's always things aren't moving at a fast pace right now. So I guess what Biden's banking on is the fact that what I just laid out, that it's going to take a long time for this to get resolved in the courts. I mean, ultimately, I think they expect to lose. But I think in their mind, what they're doing is they're buying time to, you know, hopefully get Congress to pass something, you know, hopefully from their perspective. Right? Now, we can talk about, you know, the prudence of an eviction moratorium in the abstract because, you know, it's a tough call at the end of the day. Right? Like, you have a lot of people who, you know, obviously want to stay in their homes, and especially now, you know, with everything going on, and you know, it just seems to be getting worse, unfortunately. And we're going to get into that later on in the show, I assure you. But you know, you feel for those kind of people, right? But at the same time, you have these landlords that have invested, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I'm not talking about the big, you know, the big guys who own like 100 different properties. I mean, look, granted, you know, they're entitled to the same rights of their property as anybody else. But you know, you got to kind of put a when it comes to political things, what I've noticed is that you always have to put a human aspect on it, right? You got to make it an empathetic story. So, you know, for someone like me who's kind of on the supporting the landlord side of the fence just a little bit, you know, that's how I'm going to cast it, right? Like we have, look, like I said, you got a lot of like low-level people. I don't want to say low-level, but, you know, just normal, regular Joe Blows who maybe own an extra building or two on the side to help pay for their kids' college tuition or something, right? Those are the people that I'm talking about, for the most part, that are really going to be negatively impacted by this. Because at the end of the day, think about it. The big guys that own, you know, like I said, a couple hundred properties, they'll end up getting some kind of bailout anyway, or they you know, they probably have enough liquidity to stay alive without having to worry about the rent for now. I mean, I don't know. You know, I can't speak to each one individually, but that's what I would expect, right? So that being said, another story from Fox. This was this morning, I guess, just to kind of highlight the impact that this moratorium has on, you know, small landlords, right? So on Fox and Friends this morning, a landlord was talking about how he's out $24,000 in rent because of the moratorium, and he's telling, you know, the people on Fox that the certain tenants who aren't paying are buying boats. Not just one boat, mind you, like multiple boats, instead of paying their rent, because they know they don't have to. And, you know, let's be perfectly honest about it. There's plenty of people out there who, you know, aren't the best money managers. So whether it be the, you know, the stimulus payments, quote unquote, or the, you know, the moratorium that, you know, excuses people from paying rent, you're going to get a lot of people who aren't going to, you know, take advantage of that situation, maybe put some aside, invest in Bitcoin or something to make some extra dough. No, they're going to go out and buy PlayStation 5s and Xboxes and, you know, maybe rims for their car. Who knows what they're going to do. But I don't know, man. It's a tough call. It really is, this moratorium stuff. But I'll give you a little more background on the story from Fox about this small landowner. So a North Carolina landlord says he's out $24,000 in unpaid rent from tenants, while one renter bought three boats over the course of the eviction moratorium, just as the CDC announced a new ban that will last until October 3rd. Okay, so kind of fills in the colors a little bit. Biden's going to be, you know, their new moratorium's going to go till October. So I guess, you know, if you're a renter, you're safe for a little bit longer. If you're a landlord, God help you, sir. You know, what else have we got going on here? Shoup, this is the guy who owns these apartments. He's the landlord in question here. He said he's had to spend $4,500 on repairing the residence that, you know, he's losing his rental income on. So, and, you know, he can't collect rent. So he's, you know, he's digging into his own pocket to pay, because he still has his legal obligations as a landlord, right? Like, you have a duty to maintain a, you know, a habitable premises, right? Now, you know, tenants are usually responsible for if some of the lower end stuff, like let's say a doorknob falls off, you know, that's something they'd be responsible to fix. But obviously, you know, if the air conditioning goes out, that's something the landlord's got to come in and do, under most circumstances, mind you. Now, there's a lot of, depending on how the contract is worded, there's different, you know, obligations. Each case is different, and they can kind of, you know, the renter and the landlord parties can kind of, you know, dole out responsibilities with a little bit of leeway. But that's the problem, folks. You got these people who are, you know, they own a few properties. They're not rich by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, they're successful enough to be able to afford a rental property to provide some additional income, and now they're getting screwed over by this moratorium. And the other thing that this Fox News article highlighted was that only 7% of the federal rental assistance that was supposed to go to the landlords has been doled out. 7%. And you got to think, I don't know the exact figure in front of me right now, but, you know, we're probably talking billions of dollars that's just sitting, not getting spent. I mean, granted, there's probably no, the money was probably just printed out of nowhere, borrowed on debt. It doesn't even really exist at the end of the day, but, you know, for cash on hand to help these landlords out, it's just, it's not getting to them. And you got to wonder, like, you know, is it government incompetence? Is there some other scheme going on here? I don't know, but we'll keep following it. You know, good luck to everybody out there, landlords and tenants combined. Let's just hope, you know, this pandemic thing's going to go away. I mean, it probably, we're going to, like I said before, we're going to get into more COVID-related stuff later in the show, but it's not looking good. You know, put it bluntly. So speaking of, you know, kind of tying into the rental assistance federal program, speaking of the government, you know, the federal government blowing money like it's going out of style, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, I'm sorry, bipartisan infrastructure bill, right? Another story from Fox News today. Headline, bipartisan infrastructure bill may cross Biden's red line with national mileage fee. So, what is this talking about? Well, there were, as you guys may or may not be aware, the federal government, specifically Congress, is working on passing a infrastructure bill, quote unquote. And the reason I put quotes around infrastructure is because I saw a statistic that said like close to maybe like 10%, 10 to 15% was actually going to be spent on, you know, what you would consider infrastructure, you know, roads, bridges, trains even. And the other 90% is going to go towards God only knows what, whatever, you know, pet projects these corrupt politicians have and that they want to throw money into. None of it's good for us, mind you. Now, I'm not saying we don't need, you know, repairs to our roads and bridges. Of course we do, because, you know, frankly, where we live, especially in central Jersey, we have more potholes than we know what to do with. And, you know, it would be good for something to get done, you know, at least, you know, with all the money the government spends on ridiculous nonsense, at least spend some on the roads, you know, so that's going to benefit everybody and not just, you know, a particular group of cronies or corrupt people, you know. It's all we ask for. I think it's a very simple request, but, you know, what do I know, right? I'm just a young man myself. So anyway, to get back to the main enchilada here, what this infrastructure bill is going to leave the door open to is what's called a national mileage fee, right? And what that means, it's like an indirect tax on vehicle usage, right? So what isn't a part of this bill is a hike in the federal gas tax, right? And that was, since 1993, that's been at 18.4 cents a gallon. And for whatever reason, they don't want to increase that. I mean, not that I'm complaining. Don't increase our taxes, you know, especially in a time like this. But instead of, you know, hiking just the gas tax, what they're going to do is potentially, and I'm saying potentially because the bill only leaves it open as a possibility, what they might do is tax you based on the mileage you drive in a given year, right? And I'll quote a little bit from this article here. So the program, you know, the mileage tax program, I guess, would target passenger motor vehicles, light trucks, and medium and heavy-duty trucks, while fees would likely vary between vehicle types and weight classes to, quote, reflect estimated impacts on infrastructure, safety, congestion, the environment, or other related social impacts. So how do I see this working out? You know, at its most granular form, at least how I'm visualizing this working. If you're driving a Prius, you're going to pay, you know, let's say a dollar. Yeah, it's a little too high. Let's say like 10 cents per mile, right, if you're driving a Prius, very fuel-efficient car. You got an F-150, 25 cents a mile. You're driving a big, you know, H2, or maybe you got a government surplus Hummer or something, Humvee, I should say. You're probably paying, you know, 40 or 50 cents a gallon, or not a gallon, per mile, something like that. You know, that's not obviously what they're actually doing, as this hasn't even been really ironed out, but that seems to be the scheme they're going for. But they're going to try to tax the people driving the biggest cars, who drive the most amount of money. And you got to think, who is that going to impact the hardest, right? You're going to be, it's not, you know, Jeff Bezos, okay? He's in a rocket ship. He doesn't have a car. I'm sure he does have cars, but you get what I mean. He's got more money than he knows what to do with. He's going to pay, you know, maybe an extra $1,000 at the end of the year, max. Drop in the bucket for him. You don't care. But, you know, Joe the plumber down the street, who has his plumbing truck, which is a big, you know, F-350 with roof racks and everything, who's driving to job sites all day, he's going to get screwed by this, right? And that's what it's going to do. You're going to be killing these small contractors who are out driving trucks around, who have to put a lot of miles on their car in any given year, going to different jobs. It's, you know, it's just another way to extract from the system and keep, you know, the middle class and, you know, the working class down. Now, we all like to talk about how, I don't want to say all of us, but, you know, you hear from the political left all the time that, you know, they're always looking out for the little guy, and they, you know, they hate the big corporations and yada, 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 yada. But they advocate for these policies that end up screwing the little guy over, not the big guys, right? So you could, like, you know, you can tax these guys all you want, and I'm sure, you know, your big trucking companies might end up paying a hefty amount of change for this. But again, they could probably absorb the impact, but even if they can, that's going to trickle down to, you know, an increase on food prices, right? You don't realize how, you know, how far a lot of the food you get at the grocery store gets shipped. You got stuff coming from California to New Jersey, from New Jersey to Wyoming, from, you know, here to there. All of that's going to be impacted by this tax if this gets implemented, right? Because it's going to be more expensive to ship these goods. Again, and put that on top of the cake we already have building here with the inflation, with the devaluation of our currency, with the fact that we have an excess of, you know, unfilled jobs because of for whatever reason, the federal government's paying people more money on unemployment than they would make working. We're headed towards a financial collapse, people. I hate to say it, but, you know, it's not looking good. Sorry to be so, you know, I don't want to say morbid, but, you know, pessimistic about the situation, but you can't help but look at this kind of stuff and realize that, hey, something's not right here. We're getting screwed. You know, the feds don't seem to actually know what to do. They don't care. And we're just headed towards a cliff. So, I don't know, folks. buy gold, buy silver. I'm not a financial advisor, so don't take my advice. But, you know, what I'm doing personally is I'm trying to invest in some hard assets, buying some Bitcoin, diversifying, trying to find things that I know are going to stand the test of time. Because, look, at the rate we're going with the money they're spending, and God knows, was this going to be a multi-trillion dollar infrastructure bill? What are they looking at? $1 trillion right now. Yeah. Where's that coming from? Where's it coming from? We don't have that. It doesn't exist. They're just going to print it, and you know, it's basic supply and demand. If you got $100, each dollar worth a dollar, and suddenly somebody prints an extra $100, now there's only a certain set amount of value between those two sets of $100. Each dollar is now going to be worth 50 cents instead of a dollar. Hopefully that makes sense. The point is, when you have more money floating around like you would, you know, any other good, the less valuable an individual piece of money becomes. So that's where we're headed. Watch your investments. Be careful, folks. It's a shame. Now, moving on to the COVID stuff, right? The pandemic. I got a whole block of things to bring to your attention to kind of highlight. And oh, man, it's going to be a big one. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a short little break, and we'll come back on, and we'll start diving into the COVID stuff, guys. Enjoy the commercials.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
For over 50 years, Hunterdon Medical Center has been a leader in delivering comprehensive medical and health services to our community. Our staff is committed to providing the highest quality of care to our patients. If you need a physician, we can refer you to over 300 of the best. Call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Okay, we're back. How's it going, folks? Chris Sobieski. Got to remind you again. Coming to you live from the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce radio station here in beautiful Flemington, New Jersey. So far this hour, we've been talking about the eviction moratorium, Biden's, you know, it possibly, well, definitely illegal extension of said moratorium, the infrastructure bill, the potential taxes that might be involved in that. It's not looking good, folks. So to continue adding to the bad news, unfortunately, we're going to be talking about COVID. And because it's just a gift that keeps on giving, and it won't go away no matter what we do, unfortunately. At least that's how it seems. So, interesting story I saw today. It's coming from NJ.com. And what I'll try to do is link all the stories that I highlight in the somewhere on my Facebook page or in the show notes on YouTube or wherever I end up uploading this to. So, here's a story from the NJ.com today. NJ reports 1,345 COVID cases, 4 deaths. Cases spiked the highest one-day total in 3 months. So, let me read you a little bit from the article here. New Jersey on Thursday reported another 1,345 confirmed COVID-19 cases, the state's highest single-day total in nearly 3 months. 4 more confirmed deaths, while the number of coronavirus patients hospitalized statewide remained just below 600. The Garden State's average, yada, 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 increased up from 35% a week ago and 367% a month ago, the highest average since May 10th, yada, 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 yada. So what's going on here, folks? We got another spike in COVID cases. No surprise there because this is a natural, I won't say natural, but it's a, you know, this is a virus. It's a pandemic. It's going to hit everybody differently, especially now that we have this Delta variant floating around. It gets kind of, you know, I think that's what's driving a lot of these cases, right? So this is from another story from NJ.com related to the Delta variant that I thought was incredibly fascinating that I should highlight. Now, there's only one line in here that really kind of stuck out to me. Let me see if I can find it here. Here we go. Yeah. So, again, article's titled, Can I Get the Delta Variant If I Already Had COVID-19? First paragraph. The Delta variant now accounts for over 93% of all COVID-19 cases in the United States. And some who tested positive are wondering whether or not they can still get the Delta strain. So this Delta thing is now, like, basically all of the I don't want to say all, but almost all of the current, you know, case numbers are coming from this Delta variant, right? So, you know, this article kind of goes on to say that, you know, studies have shown that reinfection, you know, if you had COVID already, and then you get it again, is incredibly rare, but, you know, it still does happen, right? And, you know, you got to think, like, a significant portion of the country has been vaccinated, and, you know, the case numbers were kind of trending downwards and kind of leveling out over the past few months. But it looks like, you know, we're getting another flare-up of this thing. Well, I guess it's a different thing now. It's the Delta variant instead. And, look, you know, I'm not an expert. I'm not a doctor. But, you know, from my basic understanding of vaccines and, you know, coronavirus-type diseases, this is much like the flu in the sense that you're going to get various mutations of it, right? Like, this is basic stuff. This isn't, you know, medical misinformation or any of that other garbage. This is just simple, you know, known facts, right? When it comes to the flu, for example, you know, they make a certain number of flu vaccines every year, and they try to, you know, use their best guesstimate to figure out if these particular vaccines they make on any given year are going to match whatever flu strains are floating around in that year. So it's always a game of catch up with these vaccines when it comes to these, you know, airborne influenza style coronaviruses, right? And that's where I think we're going with Delta. And again, like I said, I'm not an expert. I don't know if this is 100%, but, you know, in my opinion, what I think is going on here is that we have, you know, the spike in cases, and the vaccine may be, you know, ineffective in preventing it, right? Like, you got to think, like, all these people have been vaccinated. We should expect that the number of infections should go down, you know, regardless of whether people didn't get vaccinated. So, I don't know, folks. It's rough out there, and it looks like we might be headed towards another shutdown. And, you know, the government response to this is just getting kind of out of hand here. Specifically, what I'm talking about was, you know, probably one of the scariest things I've seen in my short 28 years on this planet. And this is coming out of New York City. You probably heard about this, but the story's coming from Fox 5, New York. New York City launches their vaccine passport. So, read you a little bit from the article. If you didn't hear about this, I'm going to bring up the speed. New York City will require proof of vaccination for people who want to dine indoors and take part in other activities like gyms and theaters, and for those who work there. City's most aggressive step, yada, yada, yada. This is, like, one of the most Orwellian things. I don't even say Orwellian. It's, like, one of the most coercive things I've ever heard from an elected official, and I've been doing, you know, I've been in the business, quote-unquote, for a few years now. So this is coming from Mayor Comrade Bill de Blasio. Quote, this is a miraculous place, literally full of wonders. If you're vaccinated, that's going to open up to you. If you have the key, you can open the door. If you're unvaccinated, unfortunately, you will not be able to participate in many things. Now, Mr. de Blasio, I know you're the elected mayor of New York, but, you know, go jump off a cliff, all right? This is ridiculous, dude. You are an elected official, right? You are beholden to the people of your city. Okay, you don't, like, tell them, oh, you must do this, you must do that. You know, you're effectively holding these people hostage, okay? This is sick, dude. This is Orwellian. So let me get into the rest of the story here. I want to kind of spell out what's going on. So New Yorkers are going to be able to provide proof of vaccination by pulling up the NYC COVID Safe app, which is the new coronavirus vaccination app the city is rolling out. The app allows a user to upload a copy of the user's photo ID, vaccination card, and results of any COVID-19 test from the previous week. Some people have noted that a user can easily upload fake documents. We'll get into that in a little bit. Into the NYC COVID Safe app because there's no verification tied to it, unlike the state's New York Excelsior Pass. People are going to be able to show either this app, or I believe they can show a physical card, you know, vaccine card as well to get into these places that de Blasio was talking about here. What did it apply to again? Indoor dining, gyms, theaters. Yeah, so you're going to have an app on your phone, or if you don't have a smartphone, you're going to have a physical card or copy of a, you know, or physical vaccine card, I should say, or a copy of a negative COVID test result. You're going to have to carry that with you at all times. Papers, please, right? This is like, I know people make a lot of, allegories and analogies to, Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union. But, I mean, folks, what else is this? What else do you compare it to? This is an authoritarian measure brought out to, it's ultimately not going to do anything. Like I just was going over with you guys before. We're having record, COVID spikes. New Jersey, I know Florida's having a tough time right now. Like, clearly this vaccine, approach isn't working, okay? And I'm not saying that the vaccines aren't effective. They seem to be for the most part. But, like I was saying before, as it relates to the flu stuff, you're always going to be playing a game of catch-up. You're never going to be able to get ahead of the virus because it's going to be mutating. And not only that, because of, the vaccine's making it more difficult for the virus to attach itself to you if you have the vaccine, it's got to mutate in different ways, and that's just going to create, potentially an even stronger variants beyond Delta. I mean, it's going to be the Omega variant next, and that's going to be like the God tier one that's going to, I don't know. The fact of the matter is, like, everything we've been doing so far, it ain't working. Whether the lockdowns, whether it be, trying to coerce people into getting the vaccines, wearing the masks, unfortunately. Look, none of this is working, clearly, in the apps, from the general, overlook of this thing, right? Like, it might help individual people. I'm not saying these things are ineffective. I'm not a doctor. I don't know. But clearly, just based on the data and where we are right now and the fact that, it's year two of this thing almost, and we're, still talking about lockdowns and vaccine passports, whatever the government's doing isn't working, okay? And what's even more disturbing, and this has been my complaint with the government response to COVID from the get-go, is that there's no goalpost, right? Because, look, at the end of the day, you're never going to be able to get rid of this thing. Look, like, we've been dealing – there's still cases of the freaking Black Plague from, medieval times that go on today. There was an outbreak, I think, in Washington not that long ago. I want to say, this year. Well, don't quote me on that. That might have affected some animals. But besides the point, we're still dealing with viruses, not viruses, but diseases from hundreds of years ago. Polio still exists. So everyone gets the polio vaccine. The thing with COVID that makes it even more disturbing is that this is, an incredibly contagious virus, right? So even if, you got these vaccines that might, bolster people's immune systems, but you're never going to be able to stop the thing from going through humanity, unless even the lockdowns clearly don't work, because even if you were to pursue that strategy, you would have to have zero exceptions, which is just unconstitutional for a variety of reasons. But it would require locking literally everybody in the country in their home for 2 weeks straight, and you can't have exceptions for frontline healthcare workers or emergency personnel. There would have to be zero exceptions. Nobody could associate with anybody outside their own household for 2 weeks. And that might not even be 100% effective, right? So, and again, I was kind of getting to before I started getting ranty here, there's no goalpost. There's no metric set out that says, hey, once we get to this number of cases per day, we're done. No more lockdowns, no more masks, no more X, Y, and Z. There's never been a benchmark target for us to hit. And, I blame everybody for that. I can blame Trump. I can blame Fauci. I blame Biden now. Everybody responsible who's got, for whatever reason, wields power in this whole situation, they're not doing what needs to be done to get the people. Look, if it was me, what I would have to do is just come out and tell the American people and be honest with them. Look, this is something we're unfortunately never going to be able to fully stop. Okay, we got to deal with it. Whoever is responsible for it, we need to, prosecute them if there was some man-made involvement in this whole situation. But beyond that, you just have to be honest with people and tell them, look, this is just the way things are. We're going to have to deal with this pandemic. It's not unlike any other point in human history when we've had, massive, pandemics before. I think of the Spanish flu and, around World War I, and again, the Black Plague, which wiped out a third of Europe more. It sucks. It's not anything anybody wants to say, because it's terrible, and reality often is incredibly disappointing. to cite my boy Thanos from the Avengers. But that's just the reality of the situation, folks. We're dealing with something that we can't really deal with, right? Like, we're trying to play God here when we can't. So, I don't know. What I do know, though, is that certainly what you don't do is violate all constitutional rights to individual liberty and, you know, bodily autonomy. Now, I find it kind of ironic that a lot of the people advocating for, you know, forced vaccinations and the vaccine passport are usually people, you know, I don't want to say 100%, but usually people who are supportive of, you know, abortion, for example. And the classic, you know, argument for that is my body, my choice. Well, why is that any different than this, right? Like, you're talking about your Fourth Amendment right to, you know, against bodily seizure here, and that's effectively what the government's doing. You haven't been convicted of anything. They're just mandating you do this to participate in civil society. If that's not Orwellian, I don't know what is. And, you know, let's not even mention the fact that you're going to have this app on your phone that's run by, you know, the government, in this case, New York City. Now, what part of the federal government or any branch of government's history with technology do you trust that it gives you confidence in their ability to keep that information private? Over the past couple of decades, we've heard numerous stories about massive governmental leaks. I remember there was a big one, I want to say around like 2013, don't quote me on the year, where, it was a database of like federal government workers that got leaked. And all their personal information was just floating around on the internet for people, anybody to pick up. And there's been numerous data breaches of private companies as well, and they do a better job. And then I'm reminded of the Obamacare. I'm sorry, I don't like using the term Obamacare because it's just cringy. The Affordable Care Act's healthcare marketplace. Now, remember when this launched back in 2009, 2010? That website was down for like weeks. It never really. I think it works okay now, but back then it was a disaster. Now, are we really going to trust that, you know, when you have to have your medical, like, case information on your phone through a government-controlled app, do you really trust that that's not going to get hacked or not get taken by somebody? I mean, my God, dude. It's scary, folks. It really is. But, you know, to kind of keep things moving along here, I wanted to also highlight that Canada is doing a similar thing. Specifically, Quebec is going to be introducing a vaccine passport, right? So this is starting to take off in Western society. Now we got New York is the first shoe to drop in the United States. Canada, they're doing it on a much larger scale. You know, we're talking a province here in Quebec, and they're doing a similar type of thing where you're going to have, I believe there's an app involved here. I'm just reading through the story from Breitbart. It doesn't really give too many details on the passport itself, but you know, they're talking about requiring it and the requirement's already there. So this might be the way that they're going to try to pursue next to, you know, give the appearance that they have this virus under control. It's like I just laid out before, they can't, they don't have it under control. They will never be able to get it under control because you're trying to play God. It's just not going to happen. Right? So, you know, what I think is going on here is that they're, you know, you don't even have to imply malice, but, you know, let's break it down like this. You have all these professionals who are paid, you know, probably far more than they're worth to, you know, respond to pandemics and, you know, control and run the country, right? For them to just sit back and do nothing would obviously look terrible because it would be like, you know, you'd think that they're advocating their duty. So what I think is going on is they're trying to do stuff, you know, to their credit. I'm, you know, not trying to imply any kind of ill will towards some of these people, though I wouldn't be surprised if a few are bad actors and doing things that they shouldn't be doing and have, you know, ulterior motives here. But they're trying to give the appearance that they have this under control or that they have a strategy to deal with it, when in reality, it's just whatever we're doing clearly has been basically ineffective because this it just doesn't go away. Now, to kind of explain how pointless this whole vaccine passport system is, at least right now, while there's still, you know, you can still use a paper passport, I guess. I mean, that's at a certain point, I'm sure they'll try to move to, you know, 100% digital. Story was highlighted on NJ.com, but I got the link from WMBF News in South Carolina. So the headline on this one reads, North Carolina college students said he'd be buying fake COVID vaccination cards. Yeah. So some students at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, are said to be buying fake COVID-19 vaccination cards to get around campus requirements that they either got the shot or submit to regular testing. Apparently, students are reportedly paying up to $200 to get their hands on them. A UNC professor sounded the alarm on Twitter with a post saying he spoke with worried students who knew how to buy a fake card and that they knew of others who submitted one to the university. So somebody snitched. Thanks a lot. Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know if you've seen the vaccine card. I could try to... There's a little picture of it on this article, if you can see it on the camera. Probably not too well. But it's really just like a postcard-sized piece of paper. I mean, look, I could go to Staples and make up a bunch of these, like, when I get done with the show here. It'll take me, like, 5 minutes on my laptop to put a PDF together, put that sucker on a flash drive, walk into Staples, and print out, like, 100 different copies, you know? It's not a difficult thing to do. And what does it ask for? Your last name, your first name, date of birth, patient number, you just fill that in, whatever. Who's going to really, like, what are you going to verify this against, right? You're just going to flash the card and you're going to, you know, you're just going to get into wherever you got to get into. So, I mean, look, I don't advocate for anybody doing this. Like, look, if they're requiring the vaccine and you don't want to get the vaccine, just don't go. You know, don't give them don't give them your business. Don't give them your money. You know, you send them a message. It's just, you know, that's how you affect changes. You don't continue to buy into stupid stuff that you don't want to buy into, right? So again, like I said, I'm not advocating anybody do this kind of thing, but you got to think, like, you know, if this is the route we're going to start taking across the country, where we're requiring, you know, people to show vaccine passports. You don't think people are going to not do that? I mean, think about all the gun laws we have, right? Like, you go to Chicago, and it's, like, near impossible to buy a firearm legally. So what do people do? They just break the law. That's what happens. Like, you're just going to – the mandate isn't going to – I'm sorry, the passport mandate isn't going to solve anything. Again, it's just another, you know, quote-unquote policy that they're implementing because they don't know what else to do. I really think that's what's going on, folks. So – yeah, I'm sure there'll be instances of people getting prosecuted for this. I know in New Jersey, I saw a story a few weeks back, and I wish I had a follow-up to it in front of me, where a couple of state assembly people, might have been a state senator involved in that too, they were talking about passing a bill that would make it a crime punishable by, I think, up to 10 years in prison for creating or using a fake vaccination card. Don't quote me on the prison on the length of the prison sentence, but I know jail time was included for, you know, doing stuff like this. So what are we going to do? We're going to keep locking people up. You know, again, the hypocrisy here. A lot of the people pushing for the vaccination cards are also, you know, many of the same people who push for the quote unquote criminal justice reform movement, right? Where, you know, they don't want to lock people up even for, you know, violent crimes in many cases, right? So we're not going to lock somebody up for, you know, a robbery that's under $900, like in California. But if they produce a, you know, a fake vaccination card, you know, the very idea of a mandatory vaccination card that goes against the Constitution, that's going to be, you know, that's going to lead you to getting sent to jail. Topsy-turvy, folks. We're living in clown world. We really are. Oh, it's a shame. It really is. And, you know, just to kind of highlight the impact of this whole pandemic is having on the world, as if we didn't, you know, need enough bad news. This is coming out of Japan. Saw this really interesting story on Breitbart. I figured I'd pass it along in the show today. So, read to the headline here. Japan, people dying alone go undiscovered for up to 6 months during the pandemic. A grim report from Japan's Asahi Shimbun on Thursday told the stories of people who died alone and went undiscovered for up to 6 months because the Wuhan coronavirus pandemic eliminated their social interactions. Now, apparently this has been going on in Japan and many of the Asian countries. There have been incredibly high rates of loneliness, and a lot of governments out there, also including the United Kingdom, have set up, like, government agencies to deal with the problem of loneliness. And I know that this is something that's been talked about in the United States for a while. I know Tucker Carlson on Fox News has brought this up before. I've seen a bunch of stories floating around and, you know, where I go, but there's like a loneliness epidemic going on, not just in America, but clearly like the rest of the world, where, you know, ironically enough, we're all connected more than ever before with our phones. I don't know where mine went. I was going to show it up to the screen, but that's not good. I lost my phone. But, you know, we're more connected than ever before, but yet you have record rates of people reporting loneliness and you know, depression. You know, it's bizarre because you would think that, you know, from 30,000-foot level that people should be feeling less lonely because they're able to communicate with each other more effectively. But I think it's the lack of face-to-face human interaction that's causing a lot of this. I don't know. I can't speculate. I'm not a, you know, a psychologist or anything. But in Japan, actually, they have this – yeah, here it is. Another quote from the article about how they set up a, you know, a government agency to deal with the problem. So the – again, from the article, the Japanese government has announced some measures to cope with the problem of loneliness, including Prime Minister Suga Yoshihide, sorry, I'm probably butchering that, appointing a literal minister of loneliness, cabinet member Sakamoto Tetsushi, in February of this year. So, Japan, this seems to be a really big problem where people are, you know, feeling lonely. They have a word for it out there called kodokushi. Translates to lonely death, and this has been a problem at least in Japan since the 90s when birth rates were really, really low. So what you have in Japan right now is an imbalanced ratio of elderly to young, where you have like a ton of older people but very few younger people, and many of those older people didn't have kids. That's a I guess just a cultural kind of thing out in Japan. So, you know, you have a lot of older folks who are, you know, locked in their homes. They don't have kids or grandkids to come take care of them or keep them busy or, you know, to come visit them. And they're dying by themselves in these, in their apartments during this pandemic. And you got to feel for these folks, man. It's terrible. You know, as someone who's, you know, dealt with bouts of depression in the past, like, you know, I feel for them, dude. It's terrible. And I know a lot of people, myself included, who didn't really do well during the pandemic, man. Like, I was going stir crazy sitting in the house by myself all those months. I mean, granted, you know, I got out and I got to walk the dogs for, you know, a couple hours every day. But, you know, for me initially, like, I got to be completely frank with you. I was kind of, in a weird way, happy about the lockdown, at least at first, like the first week into it. Because I was like, oh, this is going to be great. I can just sit at home and, you know, chill, play some Call of Duty and do my thing for like a couple weeks. And then a couple weeks turned into like 4 months. And at that point, my beard was grown out. My hair was long. I couldn't get a haircut. And I, yeah, it was bad, dude. I was not feeling it. So, and you got to think of Japan. They've had some pretty stringent lockdowns from the get-go. And they, you know, they haven't really let up too much. So they're still going through this. And it's tragic, man. You got to think about how often this happens around the world right now with all these, you know, the lockdowns and the COVID and the isolation. It's just the human cost, I think, of the, you know, the response to the virus, not the quote, good old Trumpy boy. It's like, you know, what he was saying was that the cure can't be worse than the disease. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see maybe 10 years from now when we get all the data collected, you know, just how successful the lockdown policies were in terms of, you know, preventing the spread of the pandemic. And by that, I mean, you're going to compare, you know, the deaths from COVID to the deaths from, you know, loneliness or not, you know, the inability to get to, you know, go for a cancer screening because that was, you know, out of commission for a few months back last year. I don't know. It's troubling, folks. But look, we only got a few minutes left, so I'll try to end it on a little more, maybe not positive, but at least a little more interesting, kind of entertaining note. So, another story from Fox today. The Doris Duke mystery. New revelations emerge about 1966 death of heiress's employee. Now, Doris Duke was a wealthy heiress. And, you know, in my part of New Jersey, she's famous for Duke Manor, which was her estate in Somerset County. And then also, there's a park called Duke Island Park in Somerset County. I forget what town it's in. I think Branchburg. Don't quote me on that. Duke Island State Park, which is named after her as well. I was actually there the first time a few months ago. It was a good time. It was a good time. It really was. So what's the story about, right? So apparently back in 1966, Miss Duke was involved in the death, well, allegedly involved in the death of a, I guess her assistant or something like that. Hold on, this story was a little confusing. Hold on one second. So, yeah, in 1966, I'm sorry, she had a, there was some kind of car accident where she was there, and the official story that the police ultimately sided with was that Doris and her assistant, not assistant, but a designer who was working for her, yeah, that's it, it was a designer for her, she was involved in a variety of business ventures. So she and the designer were in this car, and the official story was that the designer got out, and somehow Doris lost control of the car, and it plowed right into the designer and killed him. Now, she was never charged with anything, but, and the story kind of, like, you know, raised some red flags for a lot of people, I guess, over the years. And finally, we have a development after, what, almost half a century now? Like, probably more, right? Yeah, almost half a century. So a paper boy who was near the scene of the accident when, well, quote-unquote accident, when this happened is now, you know, coming out with some details saying that he saw what happened, and it doesn't really match up to the police's description of events. So, you know, quoting from the article here, this paper boy said that when he came on the scene, he said he saw Duke get out of a car and move her body to block his view of the guy getting hit. Let me backtrack a little bit here. Okay, so... Okay, so I'm just going to try to give you the best synopsis of this paperboy story on the situation. So Walker is the paperboy guy's last name. He was on his bike delivering the news, and he told the author who's writing a book about the Doris Duke story here, that he heard two people obviously arguing and screaming at each other. And the next thing he heard was the roar of the motor, a crash, the screaming of a man, ever so slight skidding or sound, and deceleration of the motor, a pause in the screaming, a man beginning to scream again, the roar of the motor again, the man's scream turning to horror of no, and then another crash. That is the most poorly worded sentence, and I'm sorry, but that's what this guy was saying that he saw. And then later on, he came onto the scene, and he said he saw Duke get out of a car and move her body to block his view. He asked if she wanted any help and if she wanted him to call the cops, and she screamed at him and told him to leave. So, apparently, according to this guy, Peter Lance, who's writing a book about Doris and this, you know, this incident, Torella, who was the designer who they're alleging that Doris Duke may have murdered, he was working as a designer for her for several years, and on the day of his death, the pair were taking a station wagon to look at an artifact, according to Lance. But Duke was allegedly furious at Torella, the designer, for telling her that he was leaving her to become a set designer in Hollywood. So, I don't know. I found this was pretty interesting that you have a development in a murder case, well, potentially a murder case from almost half a century ago, involving, you know, a powerful heiress who had a lot of money, a lot of influence, whose family had, you know, even more so. Doris is kind of a you know, a staple here in Central Jersey for all the, you know, the beautiful parks and, you know, facilities named after her. So we'll keep following this. I guess, you know, maybe there'll be some developments. Maybe the police will reopen the investigation to kind of, you know, clarify what's going on. These cold cases are always interesting to follow, you know, especially from a legal perspective, because you got to think about things like, you know, statute of limitations, where people can't be prosecuted for something after so many years, and what kind of evidentiary stuff is involved, plus the fact that Doris is dead already and can't really speak in her own defense, you know. But it should be interesting, so we'll keep following it. But yeah, that's going to wrap it up for today, folks. It's 4 o'clock. I got to run, hit the gym, make some gains, you know. So, yeah, this has been the first episode of what is tentatively named Sobes Cast. I'm Chris Sobieski. It's been a pleasure. Hope you guys have a great weekend, great week. I'll see you next Thursday, all right? Stay beautiful.